Welcome to the Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista, where we chat with industry leaders and get their take on the challenges facing the market. And maybe we'll have a little fun along the way.
On this week's episode, Annabelle from Central Garden and Pet joins AJ and Vincent to discuss her journey selling the finer things in life, from the wine business to the pet business.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Stirista's The Marketing Stir. I am your host, your happy host, Vincent Petrofessa, the Vice President of B2B Products and Partnerships here at Stirista. Still interim general manager. They have not taken that away from me, nor is it a title that means anything, but I use it. We're going to have some fun with it, right? And for those of you just tuning in, Stirista, who are we? Let's talk about it just for like 10, 15 seconds. We're a marketing technology company. We own our own business-to-business data, business-to-consumer data. We help companies get to that data through email, through display, connected TV. We help you get new customers. Who doesn't want a new customer, right? Email me, vincent@stirista.com. You're using that email address for sometimes that reason. Most of the time, you want a guest on our podcast. Sure, use it for that too, whatever. And also, ladies and gentlemen, I'm extra happy. Remember on a previous episode, I said this was May with AJ. The month of May, boy, did I get to see this guy a lot. And it was great. Laughs, always laughs. People always ask us, gee, are you guys really like that? Yes, we're like that. We were just at a conference together. It was amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, my co-host, Mr. AJ Gupta, what's going on?
Hey, Vincent. Yeah, it's been quite the week with you and far away from my home, but glad to be back here. And as you can see, messed around with my home office a little bit. So I think it's a little bit of a better background than my windows.
I love it. Look, it shows you got like little tchotchkes back there. What are that, like Paw Patrol characters? I can't even see what you got back there.
Yeah, I got one of those, a little bit called the little guys that come in various figures. That's my old cricket helmet there. I autographed myself.
Of course you did. That's something I would do, you know, but I wouldn't. I'm so humble. Anyway, it's, we got to see each other. We were just, I was just telling our amazing guest here, who you'll hear from, unlike a company that we've had on the podcast thus far, which is great. And I can't wait to get to her. But yeah, we were just at Battlefin together. Shout outs to the Battlefin conference. You were on a panel. Get hit with some hard-hitting questions on that panel. They were digging deep. And then yours truly was the master of ceremonies for day one. It was a good time here in New York City.
Yeah, that was interesting. I think it's been like a decade since I was grilled that way in a friendly panel.
It was great. They want to know what you're doing. They want to know what Stress is up to. I love it.
So I guess I'll be seeing you again. It's not done yet. So
no.
See you again next week in the U.S. Asian American Chamber of Commerce event next week, where we are getting the fastest growing Asian-owned business award.
That's right. The celebration, the Asian-owned, obviously, because I'm, you know, my colleague here, AJ Gupta, this is our second year in a row. And there's also great people to meet. There's great meetings that happen there. And that'll be in Georgia. We will be there next week in about 1 month period. I'm a New Yorker, as everyone knows. And I was in Florida, South Carolina, and Georgia in 1 month. So it's great. But yeah, look forward to seeing you and people at the conference. But let's get to it, AJ, because I'm really excited because these are topics I really don't know much about, like gardening. I do now because I do have a little backyard here in New York City and pet. Really, I've never had a pet, right? I have a pet snail, but I don't think they cover that. Maybe they do. They cover so many great things. AJ, audience, listeners, friends, you are in for a treat. We've got the Senior Vice President of Marketing at Central Garden and Pet, our new friend, Anna Bell. What's going on, Anna?
Hey, good to see you guys. Congratulations on the award. Very cool.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Well, thank you. I'm already taking credit for it, AJ. Look at me. I'm like, well, yeah, thank you so much. It wouldn't be the first time.
You're so humble, as I say.
I can't help it, Anna. I'm just like, yeah, you know what? I do deserve that award that I have nothing to do with. Right? Exactly. It is great to see you, Anna, and talk to you. Your organization, right? all these brands that fall under this, right? I was like, and then once I started peeling back the layers, I'm like, oh, I've heard of that one. I've heard of that one. Heard of that. So tell us about it. Tell us about the organization and then your role within the organization, kind of some day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, sure. It is a very cool organization. And I've been fortunate enough to be here about 2.5 years. And I'm still learning about brands that are new here. So, this is sort of one of those organizations that you keep learning every day. Central was founded a little over 40 years ago. And, it's really grown a tremendous amount through acquisition, through all of these individual business units coming together over time under this idea of garden and pet. And that makes it really interesting because there's a lot of great industry knowledge that comes with each of the business units. Most of these are founded by people who are very passionate about, you know, what they were doing. So whether it's someone that's in a specific species of the business from the pet side or someone that's an avid gardener, we have just a wealth of knowledge in the company across those topics. And that makes it really fun and interesting every day. We were joking around, I know, during our prep call, my mornings, I'm on the pet side. So my role is to head up marketing for all things pet. And I have a counterpart who heads up marketing for all things garden. And so our days are really funny in that I can wake up in the morning. In fact, today's day, right? I woke up in the morning and talked about dogs and cats and then had a little conversation around fish and reptiles. And then we were a little bit later, we're going to talk about horses. So it's just a really interesting opportunity and cool business in that way. Our business, we're a public company, so we're just about $3.3 billion, give or take, and growing. And the brands, as you mentioned, are well known. So although you might not know the name Central, you very likely, if you have any sort of grass in your house or a garden, or you have any kind of pet from scales to hooves to fur, it's likely you've interacted with some of our brands. So we have things like KT, which focuses on wild birds, pet birds, small animal. We have brands like Adams, which is the flea and tick brand for dogs and cats. We have brands like Nylabone, which has a tremendous amount of really fun treats, toys, rubber puppy chews, that sort of thing. On the pet side, Farnam, which is our horse brand. And then on the garden side, we have brands like Pennington, Amdro. So again, brands that I know people have heard of before. And that makes it really fun as a head of marketing. You know, I came in here really to focus on both organic growth and continued acquisition opportunities. So it's a very cool job in that way.
That's awesome. And then I loved hearing that it's, the horse and reptiles. I'm like, what? That's right. You forget people have those as pets, and it's awesome. And so, Anna, we always ask all of our guests this. I love your journey. Before this, you're in the wine business, right? But before that, take us a little back, just a little bit. How you got started in marketing? Was it a clear journey, clear path, or stumbled upon it?
I said yes to a really interesting opportunity a couple decades ago, and that's how it started. I always knew I wanted to go into business. I was actually really fascinated by I grew up in Chicago, and I was fascinated by back in the day before the computers were on the trading floor, there were people and they would yell at each other and trade. And I wanted to be a part of that. And so finance was where I started, but I knew pretty early on, I wanted to be part of commercial businesses and really work on a business, grow business, that sort of thing. But I started in finance and have a pretty, great career in the finance world with Wrigley chewing gum back before they were part of Mars. And while I was there, I worked on my MBA and I did both finance and marketing. And I was still in the finance world. And we ran into the then head of international marketing at Wrigley. And we got to have breakfast with him and we started talking. And he asked me about myself. And I mentioned I had an MBA in marketing. And by the time breakfast was over, he said, well, call your husband. Let me know what country you want to move to. You can be an IBM. And that was how I got into marketing. And so about 4 months later, my husband and I moved to England. He wanted to go somewhere he could go back and get a second degree. So somewhere that spoke English felt easier. And so we moved to England and I started working as an ABM at Wrigley. And from there, I never really looked back. You know, really a consumer goods background in marketing, When we came back from Europe, no shock, when you're in Europe, you get a bug for wine. And so when I came back from Europe, I had an opportunity to go into the wine business for a little bit, went back into CPG with SC Johnson, and I got a call to come out to California. The Gallows were looking for someone that had a pretty robust consumer goods background, but also understood the wine industry and the complexities that that brings. And so, quite honestly, they called me. It was, I think, January, February, give or take. It was a blizzard in Chicago. And they said, come to California and work in the wine industry. So who's going to say no to that? Came out here and did that for 10 years and had a really tremendous time working with them on lots of different brands. And then, like I said, about 2.5 years ago, the opportunity to come to Central presented itself, and it was really hard to say no. So I was really excited to make the jump to continue the growth pattern.
And I noticed you worked in the wine business. I just was in Napa for my birthday last month, so this one's near and dear to me. So how do you compare working in the wine industry versus the pet industry? What are the differences? Which one do you enjoy more?
Yeah, hard to choose, and you can't see them, but I have two dogs running around, so hard to choose between wine and there's a giant bottle of wine behind me, so you can see that I'm torn. It's surprising. I didn't expect to have as many similarities, quite honestly, between wine and pet. But if you think about really the go-to-market, in the wine industry side, highly regulated, every state's unique and different. And there's a lot of independent retailers out there that are truly the stakeholder for what we as a society drink, what we have access to. And so it's very small, one at a time selling, especially as you get into higher price points. I didn't think about that as much when I was going into the pet industry, but pet has a lot of similarity. We call it the independent pet channel. And if you think about your corner pet store and you go in there, there's a lot of similarities, right? It's one person or two people that own the account, and lots of influence over the people that come in, trusted character usually. And so you're really kind of thinking in the same way of working through not just a large retailer, which both wine and pet work with, whether it's, national chains or national restaurant chains, obviously not for pet, or, independents. It's very, very similar in how you have to think about going to market and some of the strategies. The difference, though, really comes in how you market. And, both pet and wine have opportunities from a brand equity perspective. People don't remember what wine they drank. I'm curious, AJ, who you visited in Napa and why, because I could probably predict some of it depending on, who you are and what you do, but I can't predict others because it really depends on who you know, right? And who recommended something. On the pet side, similar in some ways in that we have a lot of small producers, small manufacturers in the pet business doing one thing at a time. And so there's a lot of brands and there can be a lot of confusion about what does what, who works on what. So, from a marketing perspective, there's some similarities and some differences there. And then on the last part, there is some flexibility in pet that we don't get in wine. And it was part of the reason that I left the wine business was, from the standpoint of e-commerce data, which I know is close to your hearts, that is something that is actually much more complicated in the wine business because of the alcohol laws and things that you can and can't do with under, with age and things like that. Whereas with pet, you can, in fact, do, first party data and all the other stuff that becomes, quite honestly, practically a requirement at this point for marketing. So lots of similarities, lots of difference. I like to be somewhere where I'm constantly learning, and both categories give you that. But I don't think I could tell you which one I like most. That's hard to answer because they're both really fun. And honestly, it's why I do what I do. I like to work in a place where I personally have a connection, and both with wine and with pets, that is true for me. So, so it's like picking your favorite kid. You can't do that.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I figured you wouldn't tell me. So.
But you might as well ask.
Yep. So you mentioned acquisition. How involved are you with that process yourself?
I mean, we as an organization are really focused on having that balance of organic and acquisition growth. And as the head of marketing, my job is to keep my eyes out, do the analysis, make sure we're
looking at targets and understanding whether those targets are incremental or additive to us. So, you know, involved from the perspective of identifying, evaluating. You know, we just recently purchased a new small company. They happen to be working with one of our business units, so I'm less involved. But certainly as we, you know, continue to grow, more involvement.
How do you get granular in the sense of like reptile owners, horses? Like, how does that differ from each other? I mean, obviously different animals, but talk to us about that process.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's one of the things I love about my job. You know, like any other organization, you have large businesses, you have small businesses, you have everything in between. And if you think about it from that lens, this is similar, right? So yeah, you're right. Dogs and cats, massive household penetration. Lots of people have either a dog or a cat or both. And fewer people have some of the you know, let's call it smaller animals, literally and sometimes physically. But you do the exact same kind of process, right? You think about who is your consumer, even if that consumer base is small, really dig into the data, both from, you know, what's available through syndicated, what's available through proprietary data. You know, obviously we partner with lots of data providers to help us understand and get into the insights of our business, both from a consumer and panel lens, as well as, you know, just simply consumption data. And then you really get into the hearts and minds of the pet owners. You know, it's one of those things, people who own pets are incredibly passionate for the most part about the pets they own. And, you know, when you start talking about, you know, let's call it the niche pets, interestingly enough, sometimes that's even more passionate because they are specific, right? So we just finished up a campaign on Zilla, which is our reptile brand. And we had some great conversations around people who choose to have a reptile instead of another animal. Sometimes that's because they have an allergy, right? They're allergic to fur, as an example. So I can't have a dog or a cat, but I can have something with scales, right? Okay, that's great. Other times it's unique, right? I'm not just a dog and a cat owner. I've got a bearded dragon. And that's an attitude, right? That's a statement about what I own, whether it's a dragon or a snake or something like that. It says something about me as a person. And my passion for something that's unique or different or interesting. And so we really dive into that and try to understand those owners, why they're passionate, what makes them passionate, and how we can help them take some of the friction out of keeping those animals thriving. Because what's really true about the pet business, and it doesn't matter what kind of animal you own, or even really how engaged you are in the category, you want your pets to be healthy. Some people think of themselves as parents of the pets. Some people really do just see themselves as pet owners. But no matter what, you want health and wellness at the center of that. You want your animal to feel good. You want to feel good about how you treat your animal. And so that's really what we think about with our products, because we're really focused on the well-being, you know, through pet supplies primarily, to solve some of those friction problems that happen for pet owners. So it's a lot of fun. I sort of mentioned earlier when we talked about what Central is, each of our business units really does focus on one or two species. And they are generally the most knowledgeable people you ever talk to about those species. So, you know, the Zilla campaign is an example. It was so much fun, not just to do the campaign, but to get to spend time with the people in the business unit who just can tell you all kinds of crazy, cool stuff about reptiles. And, you know, who knew, right? All the different facts. And that's a huge source of information that helps me as a marketer, you know, hopefully do my job well.
Yeah. What I've noticed is if you have a snake, you are really into reptiles. People have them around their necks. Those are some unique people. Those are very unique people, those reptile owners. And dogs and cats, like you said, people describe them as like their family members and their children. It's like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I have two babies at home. I'm like, you mean a dog and a cat? Like you can't leave them. I can't leave my kids in a crate for a little while. I was like, quick compare. But no, people are very passionate about their any pet that they have. And I want to ask you, because you've done both B2B and B2C, even sometimes in now, right, in your day-to-day, it's whether it's to the shop owner, whether it's the individual pet owner, your experience does span B2B and B2C, very unique. And how do you approach those channels? differently, or do you approach them differently?
You have to approach them differently. And I think that the underlying thinking is the same, but the approach is different. So when I think about whether it's B2B or B2C, or someday maybe there's a B2D, I don't know what that looks like, but let's make that up. It's really about the human on the other side, right? And it's part of why I like the business of marketing is our job is to understand the human, right? What's going to make them tick? What's going to make them change behavior or increase behavior? And that doesn't matter if you're a shop owner or a pet owner, usually both. What matters is what drives them, right? And what are the decisions they're making, and how can I, as the marketer or the business, come in and solve the problem, help them do whatever the objective or outcome is they're looking for. So, you know, I think from the thinking about it side, it's the same, right? What problem am I trying to solve? How do I solve it more uniquely than anyone else can do that? And what can I offer to make that compelling? That's true whether you're a consumer, quote unquote, or a business person. But the approach is different, right? When you sell B2B versus selling B2C, the life cycle of that purchase is different. The loyalty of those purchases tend to be different. Some of the factors that you're considering are very different for B2B versus B2C, right? You're not just buying one thing from one brand. You might be buying, like in our case, from a portfolio as a retailer that we might work with. Well, what does that mean for us? How do we think about ourselves as a portfolio solving their needs as a retailer? And I think ultimately that's kind of, you know, it's not really marketing or sales. It's truly just how do I think about growth and how are they thinking about growth as a B2B person? For a consumer, it's how do I think about satisfying a job to be done or a need, whether they know they have it or not.
And in most companies, there's always a little bit of friction sometimes healthy between marketing and sales. So how do you kind of foster collaboration within your company between the two groups?
You know, I learned about this really in the wine business. So, you know, in wine, the sales organization, at least in the company I was at, was incredibly important and very, very good at what they were doing. So they were really best in class. And, you know, we as marketers had to understand what made them best in class, how did they work, what was great about that, and how can we help make that even better? And I think that's, you know, it's such a good observation, AJ, that the friction between marketing and sales. Sales is right now and marketing is tomorrow, right? Generally. Now that's changing a little bit with performance marketing, but in general, that's kind of it. And so why should sales care about tomorrow today? Why should we care about today tomorrow, right? And I think that's kind of where some of the friction comes in and finding that common ground where we can say, okay, look, you know, we're about to do a campaign. In fact, we just launched about, it's been a week and a half now, which is crazy. A new campaign on Farnam, our horse brand. And it's really exciting. We have a lot of cool marketing behind it, but it is an awareness building campaign. And so, you know, what's sales going to do with that, right? How do you sell against an awareness campaign? And we're talking a lot about, so what can we do to with our retailers that starts to get them bought into this so that tomorrow as more comes down the pipeline, we've built our relationships more strongly together in order to grow both our business and theirs. And that's really the thinking that, you know, we talk about a lot from the marketing side of working with sales in a way that allows them actionability and, you know, taking their feedback when they say, look, this might be great marketing, but I'm not going to sell against it. I can't, no retailer cares or no restaurant cares or whatever your part there is, customer is. So there's that. I think it's like any other function, right? In a business, you're going to have, you know, marketing and finance obviously has friction as well. You know, that tends to be a problem. And same thing, right? You kind of have to figure out what's important to them, what's important to me, where's the common ground? Knowing that you're kind of going to butt heads. And honestly, that's the point, right? You kind of need that in order to get the best outcome at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And by the way, you are blowing my co-host's mind. He has never even heard of animals. And here you are talking about animal food. So.
New York City, we're just used to rats over here. It's
I've never quite heard anyone talk about animals the way you are, Vincent. But you'll be glad to know I do live in Texas. So we have a couple of cats, a dog, a lizard, and probably some other creatures running around here. So
wow. So you are like our best customer. That's fantastic.
Yes, exactly.
Armadillos. Yeah, I'm sure.
Amazing. Yes, I
occasionally do see those in my property, and there's plenty of deer. So
perfect. We got products for all of it.
So one question I have to ask you, because we are a data company, is you know, how important is data for you in driving new customer growth or even brand development?
It's critical. You know, I think data has always been critical and important to especially marketing and sales and finance. But I think today more than ever, because, you know, really when you think about communication and connecting with people, it's been democratized in such a way that if you don't know your data, you're really inefficient, you know? And so for us, and for, I think, most of the marketing community would agree that data is critical. What I would say is more critical than data is insight, you know, and being able to take that data and turn that into something that I can really think through of why is this happening? What is the trend? What do I see happening from this data? And how do I use this to grow my business or, you know, beat a competitor or whatever it might be? I think to me, that's really the crux of it. It's not data in and of itself. It's actionability and insights that drive, you know, drive a business forward. And I do think that organizations that have a handle on that, that are able to understand the information coming in and turn that into actionable insights, comms, innovation, whatever it might be, sales stories, really do have a competitive advantage, because there's no advantage anymore from a channel and marketing standpoint, right? Anybody can put a Meta ad out there for $200 and, you know, they're competing with General Mills or, you know, Walmart.
And I want to ask this question, because we're talking about, you know, AJ as a business owner, receiving an award for his Asian heritage. I know that you're very passionate about your heritage. You know, you immigrated here, as you mentioned, from Kiev. And how has your background shaped your approach to business and marketing?
Yeah, you're right. I immigrated from Kiev. You can't hear it in the accent, though. If you need me to, you know, do that, I can do that too. But but I did immigrate, and, you know, and I was young, and it was a long time ago. But I think what it really taught me, and continues to be truly part of who I am, is a couple of things. One is just empathy for other people's story, right? You know, if I don't tell you, you don't know I'm from Kiev, right? It's not obvious, but there's this whole background and whole life experience that I carry with me that I can choose to share or not share. And I think most consumers, most humans, all humans have a story, right? And so I have a lot of empathy for that. I have a lot of curiosity about where people came from and why, you know, why they are where they are. And so just from a personal perspective, it drives me very much in my leadership style, how I think about teams, how I think about building teams. I want that diversity of thought, you know, as much as possible, because everybody's background is unique and you can't presume that you understand it unless you have a team that has mutual trust and built in that understanding of where people are coming from, their cultural backgrounds, and their life experiences. So that's a big part of it. I think the other part of it for me is, you know, this idea of anything's possible. You know, when you come as an immigrant to this country, especially, you know, for me, I'm going to date myself. Let's just call it a lot of decades ago. You know, the American dream was why we came. You know, we were fleeing something. We came to a place of opportunity. And incredibly enough, you know, it happened. My parents worked like crazy. You know, they instilled a work like crazy attitude into myself and my brother. And we feel the opportunity, right? Because it actually happened. And I think for me, that creates sort of an optimism to how I think about what's possible with hard work, with, you know, clear objectives, with bringing in other people that can help you along the way. With curiosity. And but I think those two things really are a big part of just having been an immigrant in this country, and having that experience does really shape my style and also my optimism. You know, I love to work in companies that have big, big challenges, big, big problems, big, big opportunities. I think that comes from, you know, why would I come if you just want 1% growth? Like, what am I doing here? That's not interesting. There's no opportunity in that for me. And so I think that is all driven really by the experience of coming and having built from nothing.
That's awesome. No, I love that. And I wanted to bring it up because I remember talking to you how passionate you were about your culture. And I love that. And it's amazing. So thank you for sharing that with us, Anna. So a couple personal questions. Well, one's a LinkedIn question. It's So I noticed back in it's a question we ask everyone, and it's about LinkedIn, your title, the company that you're at, right? You must get so many unsolicited LinkedIn messages trying to pitch you on something, right? What's a message that resonates with you? And one, what's a pet peeve? Which is one that you just plain hate?
The ones that resonate tend to be the ones that are either very personal. So, hey, I know such and such from your last company, and she and I work together now, and you know, I love her, or she said great things about you, and I'd love to connect. I like that, right? I think for me, you know, as we just talked about, it's all about the people at the end of the day. And so if there's someone that I can connect with that has a personal connection or needs something or wants mentorship in that way, or wants to mentor me, I'm all in, right? That to me is a really nice one. And kind of on the same vein, but from a professional side, same thing, you know, and this is sort of both the pet peeve and the positive. You know, if you're selling something, tell me why you think I need it in the message, right? Because the pet peeve for me is, hey, I'm, you know, Jill, and I sell data. Great. Nice to meet you, Jill. Let's jump down, you know, hope all the best, right? It's surprising how many people reach out and just kind of make the assumption that, that you might know what they do or why it's good for you. And, you know, instead of actually, if they're pitching, pitch, right? Give me the elevator speech, right? You guys are central. You have all these business units. We solve connectivity between business units. Well, okay. So I'm listening, right? Tell me more. So I think it's that kind of, you know, I hate to say it this way because it feels condescending, but do your homework, right? Do your homework and then call me, and then I'm going to be all yours. If you don't do your homework and you like my title and my name, I appreciate that. That's a nice compliment, but I'm probably not going to respond, you know?
I love it. That's one of the nicer answers we received. You know, that's, then people were just like, don't you dare, you just don't even reach out. That's, well, you're right. It's like, hey, Anna, I've got some data for you. Okay. Describe this data to me. And then lastly, what do you like to do for fun? What are your hobbies there? I would imagine wine, pets, right? You know, and travel. But, you know, you told us what brought you to California, but what do you like to do on the weekends?
Yeah. Well, I have teenage boys. So most of my weekends, and they play water polo, and my older one also does track. So most of my weekends, most of the year, are spent either on the side of a pool or a side of a track somewhere. So I travel, quote unquote, to different high schools and colleges around the area watching sports, which I love. You know, I joke around about it all the time, but I love it. And my oldest is about to be a senior, and I want to cry every time I say that out loud. Not ready to let him go. But so I do, you know, I don't spend as much time doing hobbies per se as, you know, I might, which is fine. But I do get into a lot of things, and I've started to do them with my kids, which has been really great. I love to paint. So, and my oldest is an artist. So we do art together sometimes. I love to cook. My youngest loves to cook. So we, you know, we'll get rest. We do the chop challenge. So we'll decide, you know, it's $20 or whatever at the grocery store, go. And we each get $20 worth of groceries and come home and cook for the older son and my husband. And they have to decide whether it's me or the younger one. So stuff like that, you know, right now I'm very focused on things I can do with them that also are things that I find fun. And then, I don't know, maybe someday when they're gone, I'll go back. And we travel a lot. In fact, we're about to go travel to Europe. I very, very, and it goes back to the immigrant thing, I'm very passionate about showing my kids the world because it's, you know, I love California. but we live in a small town and I want them to have, you know, a big vision of what's really out there. So we travel a lot. And so that's a passion and a hobby.
That's amazing. I love that CHOP challenge idea. That's awesome. That's the first I've heard of that. That's amazing. Well, thank you, Anna, so much for your time today. And listeners, I know you're already enjoying this one. That's Anna Bell, Senior Vice President Marketing at Central Garden and Pet. I'm Vincent Petrofessa. That's AJ Gupta. The summer of AJ continues, ladies and gentlemen. This has been another episode of The Marketing Stir. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to The Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista. Please like and subscribe. If you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, please email us at themarketingstir@stirista.com.